Lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth, the time of the singing of birds is come, and the voice of the turtle is heard in our land.
Throws across his body, and he got it! We're going to wave McCann around third. Throw from the outfield is up the line, inside the park home run! Deep! Gone! Whoa! Up and he makes a catch up against the wall, and he's gonna watch it fly. Strike three called. He got him on strikes.
Welcome to The Voice of the Turtle, a podcast feature of West of Woodward, online at westofwoodward.com and also on Twitter at hookslide23. I am your host, Hookslide, along with my co-host, Rob Rojacki, who is co-managing editor at blessyouboys.com, also still writing for beyondtheboxscore.com, I assume.
A little bit. I was not feeling so great this weekend, so I didn't get anything in this week, but from time to time, yeah.
Cool. So the gig is still, it's a rolling along.
They haven't fired me yet.
That's good. That's good. What else is good in the world of Mr. Rojacki this week?
Not the Tigers, but no. We'll get to that in a little bit, I guess.
We've got a whole podcast to talk about that business. I'll tell you what's going on with me. I am now coaching a fall Little League team. And it's the first year that the kids are like actually playing on the big fields, you know, with the 60-foot base pads, and you can actually lead off and all that stuff. And this has to be the absolute worst Little League team I have ever seen in my entire life.
Is it like Bad News Bears bad?
No, they make the Bad News Bears look like an all-star team.
Like, well, didn't they like win the championship or whatever? I'm rusty on that movie.
Yes, so they did. And funny story, because I thought maybe for a team building exercise, I'll gather the team together. We'll have a party at my house. We'll watch the Bad News Bears. And then I remember there's like so much like bad stuff in that movie.
Didn't they do a remake? Maybe the remake's a little bit tamer.
I will check that out and see.
It's like Billy Bob Thornton or something. But no, you just need to coach them like what's his name? I forget the actor that did the first one.
Like Walter Matthau.
Yes.
Yeah. What was his name in the movie? Buttermaker? I think was the coach's name. Coach Buttermaker.
I think so.
I drink a lot of beer before I go to the game. Yes.
Yep.
I'm already kind of doing that. This team is slowly sucking the will to live right out of me. It's awesome.
Wait, are we talking about the Tigers or your Little League team?
Yes. Yes. All right. So, after taking last week off because of said Little League team and other horrendously busy scheduling things, we are back at it this week. So, it all comes down to the week ahead for the Tigers. The more things change, the more they stay the same. The offense could use a boost. The bullpen is streakier than Justin Upton's season. And, of course, we've got a ton of listener questions. So, first up, we are rounding the bases. And we'd like to see a little hashtag urgency. More on that coming up.
Fly ball here to center. Way back in center. Deep. Gone. Whoa, man. Straight away center to the camera well. Three run shot for Cabrera. As far as you'll see one hit here at Comerica Park, and the Tigers take a 3-0.
So let's get the show kicked off. Rob, we might as well just start with where we are right now as we record this on Tuesday evening, and the Tigers are playing game two of their 4-game set against the Minnesota Twins, and last I checked, it was 7-1. They were losing to Minnesota.
Yeah, Matt Boyd didn't look too good.
That's really, really unfortunate because he's like one of the ones I think they've come to kind of depend on.
Yeah, well, the next two starters are what, Anibal Sanchez and Mike Pelfrey?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and Boyd got pulled, I think, in the fourth inning. So,
yes.
This should be a fun series.
Yeah. Okay. So the good news is...
The good news is they're still currently only a game out of the wild card spot, although that's probably going to change by the time everyone else listens to this podcast, because last I checked, Baltimore was up like 5 or 6-0.
Okay, yeah, so it's all going downhill. It's all going downhill fast, and it looks to me like... Well, here's a fun little fact. As I was driving in this evening listening to Dan Dickerson, he was saying, believe it or not, between the three... three young guys, Boyd, Norris, and Fulmer, is between the three of them, they had combined for 30 starts, 160-plus innings, and a combined ERA of like 3.16. He was saying that the Tigers' starting rotation since July 1st has been the best in the American League up until the Orioles series this past week, and I had no idea that was the case.
Yeah, they're actually performing pretty well. I think that both Norris and Boyd are kind of outperforming their peripherals a little bit. Lastacek, Boyd, heading into tonight's game, had a FIP of like 4.61. And Norris's, I'm looking at Baseball Reference here, not quite as high, but still a little bit higher than his ERA. And so both guys are, like we said, outperforming both of their numbers a little bit. Michael Fulmer has obviously been outperforming his as well. But at the same time, they've been providing the type of innings that the Tigers haven't gotten from Anibal Sanchez and Mike Pelfrey and even Jordan Zimmerman as of late.
Yeah, unfortunately. And I guess the good thing about that, the rest of that stat, is that in those 30 starts, the Tigers as a team are 20-10. So you can say that those guys have certainly done their part to kind of help carry the team through this this rough patch where Zimmerman's, you know, doing weird things and Pelfrey's on the DL and Sanchez is just being 2015 Sanchez all over again. But I'm seeing here is there's just like there seems to be so much, not just beyond the pitching, even to the offense, there's so much inconsistency here that you have a guy like, take an example, at the beginning of the season, Jordan Zimmerman comes out of the gate and he is just awesome. They can't score a run off Jordan Zimmerman. At the same time, Justin Verlander is just not really doing well. He's struggling that whole time, right? And then they flip-flop. Verlander hits his stride in May. He's been dominant ever since, just at the point that Zimmerman falls off. You can point to multiple examples. Same in the bullpen. Justin Wilson and Alex Wilson trading places. Justin Upton gets a hot streak right when Ian Kinsler decides to stop hitting altogether. This is the result. It's still a 500 team because they can't seem to like get all the parts firing at once.
Yeah, they're still very inconsistent. And as my colleague Kurt Mensching wrote for the Detroit News earlier this week, we still don't really know what this team is. And that's kind of why I kind of let off our show notes by saying World Series or bust. In that, I mean, this team could get hot for 3 weeks and go win the World Series and never look back. Or they could flame out in the wild card game or like in the ALDS and get swept. I don't think there's like a middle ground there. Like if they do make the postseason, I think it's either get swept in the ALDS or win it all.
I wouldn't disagree. I mean, like we said, you know, once you get to the postseason games, weird stuff happens and, you know, who knows how that all shakes out. But I'm at a point where I'm kind of wondering, you know, I think we could talk a little bit about this. Do they even make the playoffs at this rate? After what we saw, you know, they had a 6-game road trip between Kansas City and the Chicago White Sox. They split the series, which is fine. But in another sense, it's not fine because they took 2 of 3 from Kansas City, but then dropped 2 of 3 from Chicago. The Chicago games were the ones they were supposed to win. And I guess what I'm getting at is if you steal a game from Kansas City that you weren't supposed to win, now is your opportunity to actually make up ground and beat Chicago, who you're supposed to absolutely beat, and come away from that series, you know, 4-2 or 5-1. Instead, they've split it even, and once again, we're back to this team that just spins its wheels.
Yeah, the Chicago series was frustrating, in particular because they beat Chris Sale in that first game. Mm-hmm. Heading into the series, like, you know, they had won 2 of 3 from KC, but they still had to go up against Chris Sale and Jose Quintana. And you think, you know, if you can get one win out of that series, it's not the end of the world. Like, you don't want to get swept. If you can get two, that's great. And then they go out and win that first game against Chris Sale with Justin Verlander on the mound, but then go out and lay an egg against Miguel Gonzalez, who admittedly has been pitching pretty well of late, but he's still Miguel Gonzalez. And then Jose Quintana does Jose Quintana things against them the next day. Although he wasn't like super dominant, he kind of had like an average-ish start by his standards, and the Tigers still ended up losing that game. I think that was the day that the bullpen just combusted. Like for like
which day was that?
Well, like no, this is the one where they gave up like a billion runs in the 8th inning or something like that. But then you go into the real frustrating one was a series against Baltimore.
Yes.
This weekend where the Tigers, you know, they win the first game, everything's looking good, and then Jordan Zimmerman comes out and is just awful in his start, and then the Tigers can't get anything going in the series finale with Verlander on the mound and they lose that game too.
Yeah, and it's another one of those cases where it's like the offense just kind of took a leave of absence for some reason. I remember talking about this a couple weeks ago when we were previewing that Baltimore series and saying, look, this is a big one. This is your direct competition into the wild card. And by the numbers, by the projections, the Tigers were favored in every single one of those games, even with dropping Jordan Zimmerman into the middle of that series, going just by, like, you know, pitcher score, home field advantage, all of this. They still had a huge advantage over, it was Jimenez that night, I think, pitching against Detroit. And somehow the offense just could not score on these, what should have been very easy to hit pitchers.
Yeah, and with Jimenez and Jordan Zimmermann facing off against one another, you had two pitchers with very, you know, opposing statistics. Zimmermann's overall season numbers look very good, while Jimenez's look very bad, and they were trending in opposite directions, with Zimmermann just being totally awful in his last few starts where he was healthy. I think he's only made like one start, or prior to that he had only made one major league start since an All-Star break, and then you had Jimenez, who was actually pitching pretty well lately and continued that in his start against the Tigers. And so yeah, it's just frustrating for them to lose that, but then I keep going back to that one on Sunday. Yeah, Chris Tillman has really kind of dominated the Tigers throughout his career, mm-hmm. but still, you have Verlander on the mound in that game. You have a chance to win the series and tie things up in the wild card race, and they just couldn't get it done.
At home, you know, of all places. And so that home field advantage ended up kind of not being that way. And I don't know what you do. In this case, I suppose you look at it and you say, well, there's a couple things that went wrong. We'll talk a little bit more about the Zimmermann fiasco later in the show. But just, again, the streakiness of the offense and the fact that, again, I was listening to Dan Dickerson a couple of days ago talking about the fact that with the Tigers offense, you have a team that is top five in batting average, in on base percentage, on slugging, OPS, all the major categories. They're a top five team. Not every one of those is a number five. You know what I'm saying? They're like third best batting average, fourth best on base. You get what I'm saying? Despite the fact that they're in a top five offense, they are below average right now in runs scored per game overall. And when you look at the second half, I was just looking at this today. They're actually 14th out of 15 in runs scored per game right now. They're averaging 4.2 runs per game. Something is off, and it's a head scratcher because at this particular point in time in the second half, Justin Upton is doing things. Miguel Cabrera is being Miguel Cabrera again, and yet the slide continues.
Well, part of the problem is that they just can't score runs unless they're hitting home runs. I don't necessarily know exactly how to look up how a team fares like it or what percentage of their runs come from home runs. But the Tigers have the eighth best on-base percentage in baseball heading into this game. But because their base running is so awful and because they just have so many slow guys clogging up the bases, they're the second worst team in terms of base running per Fangraphs in baseball, ahead of only the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim or whatever they're being called nowadays. And so that's really kind of the problem there. They're getting guys on base, but they're all getting stuck there or they're hitting into double plays or whatnot. And it's not necessarily just a matter of like unclutch hitting or like that. It's that you have to string two, three, four hits together to get some runs, whereas some of these other teams are taking extra bases or are stealing bases or doing these other things. I mean, I guess you could say manufacturing runs. Sometimes you like to think that has like a small ball connotation to it,
sure.
But it really just depends on being able to be aggressive on the base pass, take some of these situations where, you know, normally you wouldn't score a run, almost kind of like Royals type runs, like they scored a lot last year, but they're just not able to get those together. And then when, you know, the home runs and everything start to kind of fall short in September, and as the weather cools down a little bit, you can still score runs when you need to.
Yeah, when we talk about, you know, manufacturing runs, I hear what you're saying. We're not necessarily talking about, you know, laying down the bunt in the second inning or trying to, you know, steal bases, that sort of thing, so much as when you have a guy on first base, you know, that on the next single he takes third and puts himself in a situation where he can score on a sacrifice fly, that kind of thing. And the Royals are still doing that. It's still, I remember watching that series just whatever it was last week. It's a stark contrast to watch that team run the bases and play that kind of baseball as compared to what the Tigers are doing, where it seems like more and more they're getting thrown out on the base paths. People like Ian Kinsler are getting picked off constantly, you know, so it's just kind of an odd situation. And yes, you're right. The Tigers rely on the home run as they have, honestly, in many, many years past, too. So what's the answer, I guess, you know, except that as the offense goes, I think the team goes. And we've kind of always said that, like, you rely on outscoring your opponents when you have a pitching staff that is, you know, as inconsistent as this is with the bullpen. Let's talk about the bullpen, for crying out loud.
What happened there?
From April, May, even into June, you know, and feeling like, aside from like Mark Lowe, yeah, you have a pretty good setup. Justin Wilson's pretty reliable. Even K-Rod's good. You know, you got when Shane Green's your eighth inning, you know, setup guy, the world looks great. And all of a sudden, Shane Green looks very hittable, as does Justin Wilson.
Shane Green's been hittable. Justin Wilson has been hittable, too. I'd have to take a look at his velocity, but I know that his strikeout rate has really kind of plummeted in recent weeks, and I think that some of that has to do with like whatever's bothering him with his elbow. I know he had like an injection in there at one point. They also shut him down for like a week at another point with something like that. Didn't they shut down Shane Green for something for a little while, too? Some sort of issue or whatever.
No, I don't recall.
They didn't put him on the DL, but they shut him down for a few days. I remember just some mention of this, that they weren't using him for a little while.
Oh, yes, you're right. You're right.
And so you got to wonder if those things are affecting them at all. Alex Wilson has been up and down, but for the most part, he's been a pretty good reliever for them. And then you look at Bruce Rondon, of all people, has probably been their most consistent reliever over the last few months.
It's unreal. Bruce Rondon, who we were so ready to, like, you know, launch into the sun and be done with him. And here he is. He's doing the thing. And hopefully he can continue doing that, because I know he's still, I mean, in the minds of some people, there was a lot of promise there, right? Uh-huh. I mean, there was always a lot of promise with Bruce Rondon. He never really kind of materialized. It would be nice to get that as an added bonus going forward into even 2017.
But, I mean, his numbers have been outstanding. I mean, he's striking out over 11 batters per nine innings, I mm-hmm. think, walking fewer than three batters per nine. And that's, you know, basically the best case scenario we were hoping for him a couple years ago, especially coming off of Tommy John surgery. He's, you know, allowing a few home runs, but I think that a lot of that was just early trouble. And I remember there was like that one against Toronto where Devin Travis like golfed it out of the stadium, yes, just like one of those ones where, you know, you kind of got unlucky. His whip is under one. I mean, he's having a great season, and there aren't many red flags here other than like the high home run rate. And that's going to continue sometime, like at some point, like he throws really hard. Guys are just going to end up hitting the ball a little bit further because he throws so hard. But if he can cut back on that a little bit, maybe lower that fly ball rate a little bit, I think he's going to be a great reliever for them if he can continue this going forward.
Back on the topic of kind of the offense and what we're seeing, the inconsistencies there, the drop in run rate, how much do you think it hurts that Nick Castellanos still hasn't returned to the team?
I mean, I think it hurts a little bit. Part of his like first half production, I think, has been offset by Justin Upton's surge. And so, you know, you have that guy kind of behind JD Martinez that's still producing a little bit. I think it's more just the fact that behind him, behind Upton, there's nothing. Like, how many times have we seen Upton stranded on base or JD Martinez stranded on base in recent weeks because those guys aren't producing well? And I think part of it is Victor Martinez slumping lately. I don't have the numbers in front of me of what he's been doing. And overall, his season has been pretty good. I think that had we looked at what he has right now, you think he's got an average in like the 280s with like 20-something home runs. We would definitely would have taken that before the season this year. Yeah, he's hitting .293 with 24 home runs this year and .828 OPS. Before the season, I definitely would have taken that. But it's his production in recent weeks that has just kind of fallen off, and that's really hurting the team.
Yeah, I posted a chart on Twitter earlier today just kind of noting what these players have done in the second half in terms of their weighted runs created plus, whether it's up or down from the first half. And you brought up Victor Martinez, and his weighted runs created is down 28 from the first half. And then Iglesias is also down like 14, and Jared Saltalamacchia is down 54. So you've got some drop-off, you know, on a couple of key players here. So it goes back to what we said, what I was saying earlier, though. You said it. Nick Castellanos disappears because he's hurt, and Justin Upton surges to kind of make up for it. But can you imagine if we could ever get these pieces all going together at the same time?
And that's part of what the Tigers needed to be successful this year, is to have exactly a lot of these guys clicking. And you have a deep enough lineup to withstand maybe one of those guys going out. But when you lose two or more for whatever reason, whether it's Victor struggling or Ian Kinsler dropping off a little bit or Camber Maben continuing to be hurt every time he, you know, picks up a baseball, it builds on itself, and the Tigers can't keep things going. I mean, JD Martinez has been awesome since he got back from the DL, and Miguel Cabrera is still doing Miguel Cabrera things, but they can't do it by themselves.
Now, I have to ask, because, you know, again, with the Little League thing going on, it's kind of hard to always check in on the games, but so I try to keep track now, you know, box scores and just kind of review what happened. But Jacoby Jones, right? So he gets the call-up, and it has just two extremely memorable games. He had, like, what? He was 2-for-4 with doubles and RBIs and the hero, you know, of two games
something
in a row.
Like that.
And honestly, I think I've seen one at-bat since then, and he struck out because he was way overmatched. Who did they throw him up against?
He's had a couple at-bats like that. He had one against the White Sox, Dan Jennings, who's a lefty. I remember this one in particular, and he, like, Jones even got ahead 2-0, and then Jennings just blew three fastballs right by him.
That's the one.
And like, I think that was kind of the point where everyone's like, oh, okay, maybe this kid needs a little bit more time to develop some. And that's fine. You know, that's kind of what we expected out of him in the first place, that he wasn't going to come up and shock the world. But it would have been nice to have him maybe a little bit closer to ready to be able to provide the, what was it, provide the spark or whatever that the Tigers were looking for. What was it when that they said when they called him out? Something like that.
Yeah, sparking up something. I'm not sure what you're getting at there. But, yeah, now that we understand the limitations, you know, which is kind of, it always happens this way. It seems like the rookie always comes up and does well the first couple games, and then lo and behold, you find out why he was in AAA to begin with. Is he the kind of player, though, at this point that you think has a chance of sticking in 2017, or is this now kind of like, you go back to Toledo next year and continue to develop?
I mean, I think he would have had to, like, absolutely just destroy everything if he was going to be up in 2017. The Tigers are facing a lot of guys without options next year. I think Steven Moya, Tyler Collins, and Dixon Machado are all out of options. Mm-hmm. And then you also have Andrew Romine coming back. So the Tigers have to make some sort of decision about their bench. And so I think that unless Jones was just like lighting the world on fire and basically taking someone's job right now, I don't think he would have had a place on the team. And from what we've seen from him so far, he's only hitting like .222 right now with no walks. And not much power other than that one double he put off the wall. I think that he's definitely destined for AAA next year.
One last topic before we wrap it up and head to the next segment. Justin Upton strained his calf muscle yesterday. He was not in the lineup in tonight's game, but according to Brad Ausmus, he's fine. He could play, but they just wanted to go ahead and give him one extra day just to be safe. Are you buying it?
I don't know, but it seems harmless enough, but the fact that he did have to come out of the game last night is a little bit concerning. And with the way that this team has handled injuries, you always got to wonder.
Well, I mean, I'm no professional baseball player, but I have strained a calf muscle and I was not ready to go 2 days later. So I'm not sure. I'm hoping for the best here because this is exactly the thing you can't have happen at this point in the pennant. What is there, 19 games now, 18 games left after tonight?
Yeah.
You can't afford to lose even someone like Justin Upton, who is producing for you at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, they're still without Nick Castellanos. I don't know what the heck's going on with him. Apparently he took batting practice, what was it, yesterday or the other day, and he's still a little bit sore. I just saw the headline, so I didn't really necessarily
Much. He said that his hand, quote-unquote, bit me a couple of times. I assume it just means he felt, you know, some pain. You know, where he'd fractured it. And he is supposedly, Jordan Zimmerman's going to throw a simulated game tomorrow on Wednesday. And I believe Nick Castellanos is one of the ones he's going to try to hit off of him. So they're, you know, moving forward, I guess.
Hopefully.
I mean, I've heard nothing in terms of Castellanos playing a rehab game or anything like that.
Well, there isn't really anywhere for him to play a rehab game.
Well, the Whitecaps are still in it. So
are they allowed to do that?
I believe they are.
They should do that.
I mean, yes,
the offense.
They absolutely could. There was some talk of him joining the team last week in the first round of the playoffs. That did not come about, but surprisingly, the Whitecaps are still in it. They made it to the second round. They are, as of tonight, I didn't check the scores, but they're playing the elimination game against the Great Lake Loons tonight.
Last I checked, they were up 2-1 in the seventh inning.
Really? So there's a chance they actually once again advance to the final championship round.
Yeah, the website's not loading right now, so we're going to pretend it's still 2-1.
Let's hope so. If nothing else, that gives them, I think it's a best 3-of-5 series in that final round. That's a few more games that you could possibly send Nick Castellanos out there to get some, you know, some live swings in.
Plus, at least someone in the organization could win something.
That's right. Same as last year. It was a lot of fun last year because just everything sucked in Tiger Town, and here the Whitecaps actually have won they won all the marbles. Any last throw-ins before we go on?
Not really.
All right. Then we'll take a quick break, come back with the warming up of the Pens segment. People, the reckoning is upon us, and I'll tell you why right after the break.
Sanchez looks in and gets the sign from Brian Pena. Pena's setting up away. The 2-2. Swing! Wow. And a miss! He got him on strikes! A new club record!
What a curveball.
17
Wow. Strikeouts by Aníbal Sanchez, and he strikes out the side in the eighth.
And welcome back to the show. It's our Warming in the Pen segment. I said the reckoning is upon us. It's very simple. You see, there were only 19 games left, and that was before the Tigers began play with the Twins tonight. After that, it'll be 18 games, because that's how math works. Time is running out, and after this series against the Twins, the Tigers take on the Cleveland Indians for a 3-game set. I did not look at the schedule, Rob, but I want to say they go back to play the Twins after that.
Yeah.
Before they then have 4 more games against the Cleveland. There's still 7 games against the Cleveland Indians left to play in this very short closing window of the season. It kind of feels like the next 7 to 10 games, this is it.
Pretty much.
You either win it or you...
I don't see the Tigers making up a lot of ground in the last week and a half of the season. So I think that they need to at least get ahead of someone in this AL East picture heading into those last few games. You could get into a situation where the Indians have kind of locked up the division already, and so in that last week maybe they're resting some guys, and then you go play the Braves for 3 games, and so maybe you can pick up some easy wins over that last week and kind of jump some people, but it's still, you don't want to get into that situation. So if the Tigers could, you know, actually go in and beat the Indians in Cleveland, which seems unlikely, but hey, it might happen, then I think they'd be in a little bit better shape than the other way.
You know, they win and they win and they win. We've had some great stretches in the last 2 weeks, you know, where you'd have these Tigers have won the last, you know, 7 of the last 9, 8 of the last 10. But the Indians refuse to lose. So they've made up like 0 ground. And it seems like every time the Tigers end up losing, the Indians continue to win and they end up, you know, falling another game further back. So they're not going to win the division outside of just beating the crap out of Cleveland. And unfortunately, every projection model I've looked at loves the Indians, you know, over the Tigers. And again, it comes down to, I think, just the pitching. But if you don't mind kind of rewinding a little bit, because I was looking back at the Cleveland series and what the Tigers have done so far. Of course, they're, you know, they've won 1 out of 12 games. They're 1-11 against the Indians. Did you realize that 4 of those starts were made by Aníbal Sanchez?
It sounds about right.
He has the most starts against the Indians out of any Tigers pitcher. Like, how bad do the planets have to align for the, you know?
I mean, but 3 more of those were by Verlander, and normally you'd like those odds, but he got blown up in 2 of them. Mm-hmm. The third one, I think, was that, what, Marlon Byrd game that he was very unhappy about when Byrd got suspended. And Verlander's career numbers against the Indians, and in particular in Cleveland, just aren't that encouraging, so it's not... You know, you still don't go into that series with high hopes of the Tigers actually doing something. I think Michael Fulmer and Daniel Norris are the other 2 starters in that series. And so maybe they can make some noise in those games. But still, I mean, you're going into Cleveland where their record is ridiculous this season. And I think that if the Tigers can steal one and still kind of stay within the wild card race, that'll be fine. But as far as the division goes, I mean, they're, what, 6 games back with 19 left? I mean, you just don't make up a deficit like that quickly.
No, 6 games back, and then we said 7 left to play this season against the Indians. So obviously there's a chance there if you can keep the numbers steady, if everything else remains the same. Fine, you have to sweep all, you know, both series to get yourself into first place. It's probably not going to happen. But if you can at least get on the good side of 500 in that series, maybe somewhere in the other games where they're beating up on the Twins and beating up on the Braves, you know, and as I say this, they're actually getting beat up on by the Twins, so... Chuck it, man. Throw it all out the window. I don't know. You have to win these games right now.
You really do, especially in a game being started by Kyle Gibson, of all people.
Yes.
You know, the Twins' rotation has just been in shambles. And then something I saw with the Braves earlier today. I think the Braves actually lead the league in runs scored, lead the National League in runs scored since their top prospect, Dansby Swanson, was called up. And so this is something that I had pointed out early on. I think back in like April, I said, you know, that Braves series at the end of the year, they're going to be a lot better than they are earlier in the year. And so I was not happy about that. But I think that by that point, things will already be decided. It doesn't seem like this is going to come down to the last game or 2 of the season.
I wouldn't think so. No, it's going to come down to that final 4-game series against the Indians. Cause I mean, that's it. Well, once that's over, I think you have isn't that the last series before the final? Yes, it is. They play four against the Indians, and then they close it out against the Braves. So it's all going to come down to those final four games, and you know, best of luck, I guess. We talked a little bit, just touched on the probable pitchers, and I'm still trying to sort it all out because the sites that I've looked at, you know, 538 has some kind of forecasts on there, and theirs are not correct. Because Zimmerman was supposed to start
Thursday against the Twins.
Was it Thursday against the Twins?
Yeah, it was Thursday. No, he was supposed to start Thursday against the Twins, but
right, that's why Pelfrey is starting
off of that. And so I think Pelfrey starting, yeah, against the Twins on Thursday, which should be so much fun. And then it's some combination, I think, of Fulmer, Norris, and Verlander in those next three games against the Indians.
So it looks like, okay, yeah, Verlander was already kind of slated to start on the Friday.
Sounds about right.
I would imagine he'll keep his spot, and they'll bump Fulmer to Saturday, if I had to guess.
You'd like to keep Verlander in that spot so he stays in every 5 days, and potentially right. You can squeeze him in for another start down the stretch.
Plus the Indians are pitching Kluber in that game, so.
So we're probably going to lose no matter what.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, if you're going to have a shot, you know, I'd rather have Verlander be the guy. Well, but like you said, he's not been good against the Indians, so maybe Fulmer is the guy for that. Oh my goodness, I don't know. That's going to be a very gut-wrenching series and possibly a very frustrating series.
I mean, it's been a very frustrating season, so why stop now?
Right. Because you've got to come to the, you know, grips with the fact that if they go into Cleveland and get swept, it's over.
Yep, pretty much.
I mean, there's no crawling back into the division.
And they have to go, if ESPN is correct here, they have to go against Corey Kluber, Carlos Carrasco, and Trevor Bauer.
Right, that's what I have on 538, too. Because, you know, you hoped, when I got the news the other day that Danny Salazar is probably going to be out for the rest of the season for the Indians, he's injured or whatever it is, I thought, well, maybe there's a chance, but they're not even facing him. They weren't going to face him, I mean, in this series. So they have to deal with the other really awesome pitchers from the Indians, and that's going to be that. So we talked about the fact that after that, it's they've got the home series against Kansas City, so we get to try that whole business again, four against the Indians, and then finishing out the season against Atlanta. It's unlikely they capture the division spot. I'm ready to go ahead and let that dream go. That's fine.
Yeah.
In order to make it happen with the wild card, you got the AL East and your prediction that you've talked about for a couple weeks now, just the fact that in these last couple weeks down to the end of the season, the AL East is going to be this massive, like, cannibal fight. They're all playing each other is what's happening.
They are. I mean, I think I was looking earlier today. I don't think Boston plays another team outside the AL East for the rest of the season. I think all of their games are against division competition. You have the Blue Jays who still have to go out to the West Coast for a couple games.
Oh, I can't remember.
I guess so.
This late?
I can't remember who they're playing, but they have another West Coast trip left. And then the Orioles still have several games against the Blue Jays, the Red Sox, and the Yankees who have come on too. They're only two games back in the wild card. Like, it would not be that shocking if the Yankees jumped up, especially with all those games left against Toronto, Baltimore, and Boston.
It's amazing to me that we spent the first couple months of the season kind of talking about how the AL Central was, you know, a really competitive division this year. The White Sox were making a showing. The Indians are obviously flashing greatness. We expected the Tigers to be really good. The Royals, the defending champions, it was like, wow, it's going to be a crowded race. And we laughed and laughed about the AL East because the East just sucked so bad. And here we are in a situation where I know it was a couple of days ago. I'm not sure where it is now, but I know as of a couple of days ago, if the season had ended that day, your two wild card spots, you would have had three AL East teams in the playoffs, basically.
Yeah, that's still true right now. Boston's leading the division by a couple games over Toronto, and then, yeah, Toronto and Baltimore hold those two wild card spots right now.
Insane. So after all that, it's that
I mean, they're central. All, like, right there. Like, Boston would be, as like, if you're ranking teams based on win-loss record, they would still be the three seed in the AL. Like, both Cleveland and Texas have better records than them, so it's still, like, a lot of infighting there, but yeah, I mean, those other two teams are neck and neck.
Yeah, speaking of Texas, that's a little fun fact that I saw. Buster Olney tweeted that today and was pointing out that when you look at the Texas Rangers and the Houston Astros in terms of their records not playing each other, their records are almost identical. They're off by like maybe one win, one loss. But in head-to-head, the Rangers have beat the Astros something like 14 games to one, something like that. And so it's like the Indians and Tigers are in exactly the same situation. So now you have these two divisions where really it's not that, you know, the teams in the top got there because they beat up so badly on their nearest competition. And then in the East, it's just a goat rodeo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just don't know what to make of it. It's really funny, especially with the Yankees coming on so strong after, you know, selling at the deadline, trading away Carlos Beltran and all this, and then they get better because they called up all these good young prospects.
Care to make any bold predictions? I mean, we're in the middle of the Twins series, so it's probably almost not. But go ahead. There's two more games left in the Twins series.
I mean, I don't know. If I had to pick today, I still think the Tigers squeak into that second wild card spot. I don't feel great about that prediction, but there's just so many games left against the AL East that, you know, Toronto and Baltimore and Boston and New York, they're all just going to beat up on each other. And I think that it's very tough for two of those or three of those teams to emerge out of that head and shoulders above the Tigers with so many games left against crappy competition.
So let me kind of flesh that out then. What you're saying is you're hoping that, let's say, Boston holds the division spot, so they're not really in the conversation for the wild card, but then you're hoping that, say, like the Blue Jays and Orioles, for example, just beat up on each other and one knocks the other out of the spot. Because obviously if one team is winning all those games, they're going to hold their spot.
I feel like one of these teams is going to go into a little bit of a slide with all these games left against one another, and someone is just going to fall out of the race. And then the Tigers, you know, being able to face Minnesota so many times, despite what's happening tonight, I still think they're going to do well against the Twins. Facing, you know, the Braves at the end of the season, hopefully that will still go well for them. And even, like I said earlier, facing the Indians in a series at the end of the season where they may be resting some guys, I think the Tigers could have the easiest road to a potential wild card spot.
I see. So it's almost better if the Indians do clinch the division before that four-game series.
Yeah, if anything, like having the Indians take two of three this weekend might not be the worst thing in the world. I mean, yeah, it's still not ideal, but
this is twisted.
If the Indians could, let's say the Tigers win maybe two of three in Cleveland, but then the Indians win like their next seven games and just clinch the division from there, I think that would probably be best case scenario for the Tigers.
I can't recall. I think the magic number was something like 14 or something like that, 15?
I don't know. I haven't even looked at it. I'm usually only looking at that number when we're the ones calculating it.
Oh, I'm definitely watching because we're second in line, so I'm kind of like going, okay, how much time do they have left before they're finally
the Tigers? Oh, yeah, no, eliminated. It's right in front of me here. I didn't realize that MLB puts it on their website yet.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Well, why am I calculating this crap?
They call it elimination number, though, so. Oh.
So the elimination number is?
14. As far as the Tigers being out of the division race.
Wow. Yeah, so they're not going to... They can't clinch it by the weekend, by this three-game series. But the Tigers are making us do weird things, is the point. Because last year we were sitting here going, it'll be awesome if they lose a lot of games because tanking means, you know, top 10 picks. So we were really kind of rooting for them to lose a lot of games. And now we're sitting here talking about, yeah, if they could just lose a bunch against the Indians, let the Indians clinch.
We're also in a position like last year. Our last year selves would have hated us so much right now for being so ambivalent about the season when we're actually winning and in a playoff race. We would have kind of killed for this last year.
Let's talk about that because I disagree. I think there's a lot of happiness at either ends of the spectrum. The team was so bad last year that it was actually kind of entertaining. And you had all the brand new toy prospects that you could watch. And, you know, so it was okay. There was a lot of no pressure. The pressure was off. We knew they weren't competing. Now, you've got that. The other end of the spectrum is when they're, you know, leading the division for most of the season. That's exciting. That's energy. That's great. You know, what they're doing right now is hell because you know they're in it. They're still in the race, but they are continuing to just kind of dance. It's like two steps forward, you know, three steps back, one step forward, two steps back, four steps forward. And basically all they're doing is pacing around the room, wearing out the same patch of carpet month after month after month. And it's maddening.
Yeah, pretty much.
But maybe you're right. Maybe last year us would be like, shut up. You're in a division race. Enjoy
I mean,
it.
some of those podcasts were pretty slap happy with how bad this team was.
Yeah, see, there's a lot of comedy in the darkness there. Right now it's just so close you can taste it, but so far away.
Yeah.
Oh, well. We have things to talk about in the next segment, though, so I want to kind of tie this one off. When we come back from the break, it's the Zimmerman situation. Yeah, that. Right after we come back.
3-2 pitch. Swinging a line drive left center field. Jackson on the run. He'll make the catch in left center. Max Scherzer, a pump of the fist as he comes off the mound. The bases were loaded with nobody out. He strikes out two and gets Kiasko on the line.
And welcome back. Here we go with the High and Tight segment. It's the Jordan Zimmerman situation, Rob. We got to talk about it. I'm gonna. I took my blood pressure meds before the segment started, so I will try to remain mostly calm. But it's simply the fact that in the middle of a wild card race, going up against our nearest competition in the Baltimore Orioles for a 3-game series, the Tigers choose this moment to drop a rehabbing, still struggling, just got his ass lit up in his latest rehab start, Jordan Zimmerman, into that rotation to play one of those games. And the results were fairly predictable. He got killed.
I just want to know, like, who was responsible for that decision, because it was maddening. Like, we went into that. I remember writing the game preview and saying, this isn't going to work. And, you know, hoping that the Tigers offense could manhandle Ubaldo Jimenez even more so than the Orioles offense was going to manhandle Jordan Zimmerman like they did. And obviously that didn't happen and the Tigers lost, but like, it's just like, this isn't the first time that it's happened either. Like they did this once before. He wasn't ready. And then he goes down in Toledo and gets lit up in those minor league starts too. And he wasn't ready. And then I think I remember reading some of the tweets and whatnot after Zimmerman's last rehab start, in which he gave up like 7 runs. I know that only 2 of them were earned, and like, couple of them involved like somebody throwing a ball into the dugout or something ridiculous like that, something that obviously isn't Zimmerman's fault. But one of the tweets from, I don't know, one of the Mudheads like beat writers or something like that was like, well, it's the last day of the season and hitters are swinging at everything. Like, isn't that a reason why his start should have gone even better than what it did? Yeah. And the fact that he got lit up is just like even more concerning if these guys are swinging at whatever they want to. I just don't know who was the one that signed off on this and said, yeah, he looks okay, let's start him.
Yeah, and we've been talking about that all year because, like you said, it's not the first time, not only with the Zimmerman situation and bringing him back maybe a little too soon from rehab, but just it's the timing of this. This is a very important series, maybe one of the most important series this month, and they choose that moment to put him in there and test him out to see how the wheels are running. Well, they did the exact same thing with Aníbal Sánchez, if you recall, the last series with the Indians. They dropped him in there because they needed a spot start. I'm thinking you couldn't have picked a worse time to put your struggling pitchers in there.
That's the thing, though, is that like they needed a spot start in that situation. And yeah, that wasn't the best time for it, but they like needed a starter. They don't need a starter for this. Like, they're starting 6 guys this week.
Oh, exactly.
They're using a 6-man rotation.
Exactly.
And they're just putting Zimmerman in there because they think he's going to. Like, there's measurable data. I wrote a post that showed that his velocity was down and that there are other measurable signs that he's not right, for whatever reason, and yet the Tigers still relied on him and paid for it. And this may end up being a game that costs them the season because they're going against their number one competition for the wild card right now. Like, if you were even like a little bit unsure about it, start him against the Twins, who suck. And
exactly.
He dominated them earlier this year, although I think they did light him up once already this year.
Tigers scored more runs back. But yeah, I mean, that's exactly the point. I'm saying the timing of this is just stupid. This is your most important series of the month outside of the Cleveland series. You've got the Twins coming up next. What is the frickin' rush to get Zimmerman back in the rotation? Give it 2 more days and let him start the series against the Twins. What was the point?
And the fact that they pulled him right after that and said, all right, we're going to, you know, use him in a simulated start instead of starting him in his next game just shows that, like, there's something not right there. And
now you figured it out?
Yeah, exactly. It took them, and this isn't the first time, too. Like, having it happen back in August and then having him put him back on the DL. Like, I just don't understand who's making these decisions, who's determining he's healthy, what the hell data they're using to determine that he's healthy. If I can pull up pitch effects in 2 seconds and show that his velocity is down, like, it's just a huge problem.
And wasn't it Daniel Norris that was supposed to start that game?
Yeah.
Isn't he the one that got yanked for Zimmerman? That's even more frustrating because
he strikes out, what, 11 Twins yesterday?
Yeah. I mean, that is the Twins, but still, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, my God.
And I think the Orioles are also worse against left-handed pitching, mm-hmm. I think. I can't be 100% sure on that, but I thought I read that.
So, I mean, who do you really think is making that decision?
Jordan Zimmerman, probably.
Really?
I mean, he's probably the one saying, like, yeah, I feel fine. And you expect that out of a guy like him. Like, this is like the prototypical, you know, gutsy and bulldog mentality and, like, literally every cliche announcers will use about a white baseball player, they're using about Jordan Zimmerman. And he's going to say that, yeah, I feel fine and whatever. And it's up to the Tigers to say, like, no, you're not. We're going to sit you down and not use you in this.
I mean, there's got to be some responsibility with the trainers in there. But, I mean, you're right. They're probably not going to contradict, you know, and say, if Zimmerman is saying, I'm good, I feel fine, let me go, you know, go out there and get him.
What about his pitching coach? I mean, I think Rich Doobie has done a great job with some of these other guys this year based on what we've seen. What about him? What about the minor league coaches that are watching him, you know, doing all this stuff in the rehab start and in side sessions and whatnot? Like, why? I just don't get it.
Other than the fact that that's, you know, whatever, you got the veteran pitcher, the veteran presence that you don't want to, you know, that's been kind of a narrative for a while, that people like Brad Ausmus don't want to go conflict with the veteran, I guess is what I'm getting after.
Something like that. Oh, and I have the numbers in front of me now. The Orioles have an OPS over 100 points higher against right-handed pitching than they do against lefties.
Son of a bitch. This is just so...
Like, why? I just don't get why Daniel Norris couldn't have started that game. And I think the last time he faced the Orioles, didn't he throw like 7 shutout innings or whatever it was? Yeah, it was back in 2015, but still.
Yeah.
This is the same Orioles team. I mean, same players.
I don't get it. I really don't. And it's that frustration just because, like you said, this could end up being, you know, a game that matters in the end. You know,
if I mean, it was the most important series of the month. Not even, you know, sans Cleveland. Like, no, this was the most important series of the month. And they, you know, just totally whiffed on it.
And if they end up missing the wild card by a game, then, it, you know, then you kind of go, great. I'm going to blame Ausmus because I always blame Ausmus. And I mean, I know he had something to do with it.
Oh, he for sure had something to do with it. I mean, I imagine that there are a lot of other people to blame along with this. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, it's absolutely a hard statement to make to a veteran pitcher to say, listen, this is an important series. We cannot afford to lose. Therefore, we're going to keep you out of it and put you into this next series where it's not, you know, as important if you bomb out. You know, that's not a hard or not an easy thing to tell a guy, but you have to.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that he's like lying to the team or anything like that. Like, he could be pain free and whatnot, but the fact that his velocity was down, like, you'd think they'd have a radar gun on him during some of these side sessions to show, like, oh no, you're not throwing as hard as you usually do.
I know. Like I've said before on the show, ironically, over there in West Michigan, you know, at the Fifth Third ballpark, they actually have all these, you know, TrackMan cameras, and they're, you know, they're measuring spin rate on the pitchers and velocity from different angles and, you know, all this StatCast type stuff. I mean, they're doing it here at Single A. You can't tell me they aren't making use of some of that in these types of situations.
And having that data makes the conversation with him easier, saying, you're not throwing as hard, you don't have the same bite on your pitches, we're not starting you in this game. And yeah, it sucks to tell a guy who's making $110 million over the next, 5 years, to tell him that, you know, he's not going to start one of the most important games of the season. But I think they needed to do that, and they didn't, and it blew up in their face.
And now we get to kind of see maybe that whole situation played out again, because here comes Mike Palfrey, finally, back from the disabled list. And they are going to drop him in as a spot starter in this series against Minnesota. I mean, it gets a slightly different situation, obviously, because this is not that series. You know, the Twins are not their direct competition. And yet at the same time, really? You're going to let Palfrey start?
I mean, yeah, I don't get it. Why wouldn't they just move Fulmer back up? He would have been on full rest for this game.
Because then he can't pitch against Cleveland.
So?
And they really want Fulmer against
Cleveland. I honestly think Mike Palfrey would be really good against Cleveland. He already threw those four and a third scoreless innings against them. And Fangraphs just released a really interesting piece either today or the weekend or something like that to show that, like, the Indians, like, aren't that good against fastballs, and that's pretty much all Mike Palfrey throws. And yeah, he walks a ton of guys, but, like, when he's getting guys to ground on double plays and whatnot, like, he is actually somewhat effective. And I think that when the Indians clobbering breaking balls all over the place, which seems odd, but not really doing that well against fastballs, it seems like that would be kind of the game to put him in for. And I don't know. I mean, maybe this
wouldn't
is
that,
just...
Wouldn't that just be the ultimate, the irony that, you know, Mike Pelfrey, who has struggled all year, is actually the secret weapon against the Indians? I mean...
Yeah, but I mean, it's not even like a thing as far as matchups go. Like, we've already pointed out that the division's kind of gone. Like, you should just be treating all of these games as must wins. Like, every single one you pretty much need to win. And by starting Fulmer sooner and not necessarily worrying about his innings so much over the next couple weeks, getting as many wins as you can now so that you know where you stand heading into the final week of the season.
I'm looking at the numbers from that game that he pitched. Yeah, 4 1/3 innings against the Indians. 2 strikeouts. And he didn't walk anybody. His whip was insanely low for that. So not only was he
What did he go on the disabled list in the first place for? I forget.
Back pain, I want to say.
Yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
It was like forever.
I want to say it was like lower back strain or something. But anyway, he's coming back, and the original intention, the plan, as stated by the team, was that they were going to go ahead and, you know, stick him in the bullpen and not bump anybody out of the starting rotation. But here we are, you know, we need a spot start, and it's going to be Mike Pelfrey facing his old team again. Oh, well, what are you going to do?
I mean, I'm going to be at work, so I'm not going to watch it. That'll be nice.
Oh, that's right. Because Thursday's game is going to be an afternoon game.
The afternoon game.
All right. When are they going to announce who, what the rotation lineup looks like in Cleveland? That's what I want to know. I mean, they've only talked about the fact that they are definitely going to get Fulmer and Verlander into those games at some point, but we don't know who the order is.
I mean, Norris wouldn't be able to start until Saturday on full rest, if I'm doing my math right, and so it has to be either Fulmer or Verlander on Friday. Maybe it's like Fulmer, then Verlander, then Norris, or something like that, or Verlander, Fulmer, Norris. I imagine Norris is probably going to start the Sunday game, so they can give him an extra day, too. But we'll see.
See, because Saturday's game is the one I'm going to.
They're probably going to want to have Verlander on Friday because they have Sanchez and Pelfrey going into the next two games, and the bullpen's probably just going to be totally effed. I don't want to have you bleep that out.
Thank you. But I mean, you probably get the same effect with Fulmer, though, right? I mean, he's been going deeper into games too, so it's
a little bit, but I think that Verlander is a bit more reliable as far as that goes. Oh, sure. At least as far as they're thinking.
Oh, sure. Exactly. I think actually I know for sure of the two of them, Fulmer or Verlander, it's Fulmer that has the better numbers against the Indians this year. So
yeah, or maybe they do go Verlander then Norris then Fulmer, so they can spread out the two guys who they think are going to go deepest in the games. I don't know.
Dude, all I know is I'm driving out to Cleveland on Saturday, and I now know for absolute certain it's not going to be Pelfrey. So I'm happy.
I don't have to watch Pelfrey pitch anymore. Any of those three, solid bet.
I love it. How did I get Pelfrey in two games that I went to this year?
I told you, man. I'm surprised that you didn't get him in a game. You got lucky there.
Bizarre. All right. Enough of the Zimmerman situation. Let's hope they get that straightened out sooner rather than later. But geez, guys, use your heads. When we come back from the break, we will take our listener questions into the mob scene at home. There's always 2017. Wait, what? We'll tell you right after the break.
Swinging a fly ball to left field. This one's deep. Going back. Gentry at the fence. It's gone. Wow. It's gone. A walk-off grand slam in the bottom of the ninth for Jose Davis. Incredible. Around third. Into the mob. Scene at home.
And so into the mob scene at home we go. It's the part of the show where we take questions from our listeners. You can get us those questions. We ask for them every week, but mostly it's on Twitter. Rob is at BYBRob. I am at Hookslide23. Say hi. Say hello. Tell us what you want to know. We got a lot of questions this week, but there's just like this theme, Rob, of like, I don't know. It'll come out as I read them, but maybe just a feeling of like, well, better luck next year already. And I mean, I get some of that. We're already sitting here talking about conceding the division title. That's just not going to happen. But
but we're not necessarily writing off the entire season.
Not yet. No, I don't feel great about it. But
I mean, there were people writing off the Tigers in what, like April? like, we lost our first game, and some people were like, well, there goes the season.
There it goes. You saw Frankie Rodriguez blew the save, and it's the same old Tigers bullpen, and we're going down in flames again. All right. Hensfan underscore PJK at Frogtown Tigers says, is Jordan Zimmermann probably done for the rest of the year, and how much should we worry about him going forward?
Oh, no, he's definitely going to pitch again this year. The Tigers are going to put him in at some point. Whether that's in like a bullpen type role or as a starter at some point, I don't know. But we're definitely going to see him again. I don't necessarily know that we need to worry about him going forward. We'll see what happens. I know that his velocity has been trending downward a little bit, but it's more age related from what we've seen so far, other than these like last few starts. And he was really good at the start of the year. So I wouldn't be worried about him like as far as 2017 goes or anything like that. But yeah, the rest of the season, he's a bit of a question mark.
Yeah, I'd say you've got a little more than 2 weeks left in the season, and he's doing this simulated game tomorrow. I would imagine you will see him back in the rotation for at least one more game before the season's out. And I'm not worried about him, honestly. If what we're talking about there is, you know, in 2017, is he going to be as, you know, up and down and bad as he was in 2016? I don't think so. This has just been one fluky, weird season for him with the, what, three now injuries, four injuries?
Yeah, and he was like on a run of like, I think, five straight years, 200 innings or something like that.
And when he's, you know, doing that, when he's healthy, when he's right, he's a good pitcher. He's solid, mm-hmm. number two. You know,
yeah.
It's just a bad situation this year, and I don't think that repeats itself next year. Follow-up question from Hensfan underscore PJK. It seems lately that the Tigers have missed a lot of opportunities in the playoff chase. Will they capitalize or not?
I mean, everyone has missed a lot of opportunities in this playoff chase. The fact that like all these teams are within a couple games of one another and no one is really broken out just says that, like, it's pretty much just going to be teams stumbling all over each other as we head down the stretch. And so I think the Tigers will, and it may not entirely be up to them. I think, like I said, someone from the AL East is going to kind of falter a little bit and give the Tigers an opportunity. And so I think they'll barely squeak into that wild card game and have to play on the road. But, you know, hopefully they can pull it out from there.
I'd like to stay optimistic and say that, yeah, I think they can capitalize. You know, this it smacks a little bit of a different version of 2012, you know, when they were kind of in and out of first place, struggling to beat out the White Sox, you know, in that season. And, I mean, it was every bit as frustrating, you know, just because it was like, come on, we're running out of time. But I'm very frustrated by the fact that when it comes time for them to actually play the teams they need to beat, like the Orioles or like the Indians, they have not. They have squandered those opportunities, and you cannot continue to count on those teams losing while you're beating up on teams like the Twins. So it's, you know, I don't know how I feel about that, but I'm going to stay optimistic and say, yeah, they can do it. Sierra Dean at Sierra Dean on Twitter says, just how insane is it that Osma said he didn't know Zimmermann wasn't feeling 100%? Discuss.
I didn't even see the quotes from him, and I don't necessarily know if I want to see the quotes from what Osma said.
Better that you don't.
But the fact that they don't know like whether this guy is 100% or not, it just boggles the mind. We've already been through it enough, and it's just maddening that this team has all these resources or has the chance to use all of these resources to help them make informed decisions about what players they should or should not be using or acquiring or how to develop these guys and everything. You know, every single aspect of the game can be boiled down to some sort of numbers now. And you don't necessarily want to make all of your decisions based on that. Like, you should be using them to do that, and they really kind of haven't been. And it's just maddening.
It fairly boggles the mind. I mean, because this is kind of like it's your one job. This is what you do as the manager, is be on top of this kind of stuff. And if you're not, then what the hell? You suck at strategy. So what are you contributing? It blows my mind that he said that he wasn't aware of the situation. Next question. Goggles on at Tigers underscore opinions says, I know we can still win this year, very small chance, but do we have the roster to compete again next year?
I mean, it's pretty much the same guys, so yeah, for the most part. I know some of them are going to be a little bit, you know, maybe a year older or whatnot, but you also have a lot of young pitchers who the Tigers not only have seen can do well, but are also going to be sans innings limits in terms of Michael Fulmer and whatnot. You have Zimmermann back for another year. You hopefully have Justin Upton a little bit better for the full season and whatnot. Nick Castellanos is a little bit older and more experienced, and hopefully he continues that run that he was on during the first half. And so, yeah, they do have the team to compete. I don't necessarily think the Indians are going to be the same offensive juggernaut from random places like they were this year. They're a bit up and down, and the Royals, I think, are starting to falter a little bit. And so, yeah, I think that things set up for well for them, but it also you have an entire offseason to go through, and it'll be interesting to see what exactly happens with that. You know, do they keep things fairly consistent and not really do much, or do they blow it all up and try something else? I don't know.
I'll put it this way. Before the season started, you know, we had that conversation with Steve Mickelson, the sportsbook director at Atlantis Casino, and the fact that he had set the Tigers' win total, the over-under, at 85 wins, and then people were allowed to kind of bet, you know, the over, the under. Before the season started, I bet the over. I believed firmly that they would win over 85 games. It's now looking like they're probably not going to. Maybe they can still get there. What have they got now, 76 or 77? I can't recall what they're...
I think they're 77 right now.
Yeah, 77 and 66, I think. But yeah, so I mean, they could still top 85. But I'm going to say it this way. I would place that exact same bet next year and be totally confident. With the number of things that went just kind of fluky weird this year, we talked about the fact that Zimmerman just was not Zimmerman. Pelfrey had a career worst year, was doing all kinds of weird things with his walk rate and K rate and home run rate. You know, Justin Upton, yes, always a streaky player, but this year, holy crap, that was just the baddest end of streaky you could possibly come up with. There's stuff like that that I feel like there's no way that can repeat. Of course, I said the exact same thing last year about Aníbal Sánchez and said his 2015 was so bad there's no way he could repeat that in 2016, and he did. So the chances of like all of those players all having career worst years again, not likely. And I think that puts them in a good spot.
Yeah, but at the same time, like weird stuff happens in a 162 sure. game season. And so I don't necessarily know that like this team has been more snake bitten than in previous years or compared to other AL teams or anything like that. And so it's hard to say like, yeah, if you know these things wouldn't have happened, the Tigers, you know, will be better in 2017. But like other shit's going to go wrong in 2017.
It's absolutely true. You know what's going to go wrong next year is that Justin Verlander is not going to have a year nearly as good as this year.
Yeah, Miguel Cabrera is going to miss a month or something like that. Like something else is going to go wrong. And so I think that we're still going to be in kind of a similar position next year.
It's just like we were saying, though. It's felt like a particularly strange year in the fact that they have not been able to get all of the pieces kicking at the same time. You know, Castellanos being out, Maben being up and down and in and out and tripping over crap and breaking a lot, you know.
Yeah, and it's when things go, like, when everything goes right that you have a season like the Indians are having where, you know, all these guys are hitting out of nowhere, or like the Rangers are having where they're, you know, 10 games up on the AL West or whatever they are. That's, you know, the anomaly, not necessarily what the Tigers are doing now.
Yeah. Yep. So I would say about the 2017 Tigers what I said about the 2016 Tigers, which is if they get, you know, most of those pieces all doing what they're supposed to do at the exact same time, it's going to be a great year. And nobody can predict the future, so I can't say for sure that's going to happen, but I like their chances next year. It's the same core group. So going on here, Jan Dodge at TENAJD says, which do you think is the anomaly with Zimmerman, last spring or this fall?
When we say last spring, are we talking like this
I think that just
spring?
Means this past spring, yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, probably somewhere a little bit in the middle. Like this, you know, this April he had, what, an ERA like under one? How many runs did he give up in that first few games or whatever?
He had like a 27-inning scoreless streak or something.
Yeah, like obviously that's not going to happen. So it's going to be somewhere in the middle. It's going to be something similar to what he had done for most of his career while he was in Washington. You know, he's a good pitcher. I don't think we need to be too worried about him going forward. Like over the next couple of weeks, yeah, you can worry about him. But I think that with the offseason and everything, things will be fine.
Yeah, it's funny because you say, well, what's the anomaly? Is it the spring or the fall? And they're both anomalies. Neither one of those was normal, you know, career Zimmerman. When you get that, like I said, he's a solid number two. And if Verlander can get close to repeating, you know, what he did this year, you're going to have a really strong front of the rotation with Fulmer. You know, I don't know if Fulmer is going to be, you know, as awesome next year as he was this year. But if those three guys can be those three guys, you got a great start to a good starting rotation there. Brett Yoder at Brett Yode says, for once, I don't have a question, as I feel everything is always the same with this team, and I have nothing left.
I mean, I do kind of feel the same way about this. Like, yeah. It's just been a little bit difficult for me to really get invested in this team the way I have in other seasons. And I think the part of that just has to be with, like, how inconsistent they are, or consistently inconsistent. Like, they win 5 games and they lose 6, or then they, like, alternate wins and losses for 2 weeks, and it's very frustrating.
It's energy sapping is what it is, and I feel kind of the same way. And I was kind of laughing before we started this show, thinking to myself, I wonder if we could just, like, grab a show from, like, 3 weeks ago and just drop it out there, and would anybody even notice? Because it's like we're talking about the same things and the same things about
and
those,
like,
same
and
things.
And part of it is, like, the organization making these weird decisions like they did with Zimmerman, or, like, you know, repeatedly using Mike Aviles or Anibal Sanchez, or, you know, any of the other things we complained about earlier this year. And it's like when the organization is, like, almost sabotaging the team's chances at winning, it just makes it even more frustrating.
Well, there's always the chance. There's always the chance that they sneak into that wild card spot, and at least we get, you know, one meaningful postseason game, and they could win it. And, you know, there's more on that later, so I'll save the rest. Black Stetson at Baker Jonathan R wants to know, who is the real Justin Upton?
I mean, it's definitely closer to the guy we've seen over the last few weeks. You know, he's been a great player throughout his entire career, and for whatever reason struggled for the first 4 months of the season, but has finally broken out and has looked like the Justin Upton of old. Obviously he's not going to stay this hot for a long time, but I think that, you know, getting into 2017, we shouldn't necessarily expect him to be what he was this season. I think that it'll be closer to whatever he's done throughout his career. I mean, he's still only, what, 28, 29? He'll be fine.
He should be fine. No, and he's having a very, 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 very bad year. And I would assume it has something to do with adjusting to American League pitching. Maybe. I don't know. Cross your fingers. Maybe that's it. But yes, I think the real Justin Upton is, imagine what you've been seeing for the last 3 weeks combined with maybe the first 3 or 4 weeks of April when he was really bad, and then just, like, alternate those two over and over throughout the season. That's the real Justin Upton. I did a 300-game sample size when I analyzed his roller coaster of game-by-game, you know, RE24. It's always in 30 and 40 game clumps. We just never got the 30 to 40 game high peaks throughout the year that we were supposed to. I would assume next year he returns back to weirdo Justin Upton that does this stuff on the regular.
Probably.
Eric Wayne. Our friend from the podcast, Dianos, at Comerica Eric, says, yes, my question is, everyone seems to want to raise awareness. What causes should we lower awareness for?
Weren't we talking about those people that, like, think the earth is flat or whatever, like a week or two ago?
Yes, we were.
I think that that's a cause we need to lower awareness for.
Lower awareness for, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and sign off on
people thinking the...
On the flat earthers? Flat earthers and Daniel
Norris. Like, I know that you upset some vegans a little while ago, but I think we can, you know, afford to piss these flat earth people off.
I'm going to just not say anything in response to that, because I could probably end up insulting both groups all over again. And we got past the whole vegan thing, you know, so it's, we like the vegans. I just can't imagine doing that myself. That's all.
We don't like the flat earth people.
No, those guys can go F themselves, really. Yeah. But yeah, thanks for the question, Eric. It's a little outside the box. Chief Broom at Chief Broom says, I'm not calling the season yet, but what do you think of this rotation in 2017? Who's in and out? Where will it rank in the league?
The interesting thing that the Tigers face heading into this offseason is, like, what they do with this rotation, because you have a number of guys that could start. Obviously, Fulmer and Boyd and Norris have all pitched very well this year, and I think have earned the right to at least compete for spots next year, but you still have Mike Pelfrey under contract. You still have Anibal Sanchez under contract, and there's not necessarily anyone else in the system that can be thought of as, like, a sixth or seventh starter, and so you still need to have all these guys in the... You can't just, like, trade Anibal Sanchez away because you have these five other starters, because there's no number six. There's no number seven. Like, who's going to start those games beyond them? Buck Farmer? Kyle Ryan? Something like that? Like, no, you don't want that. And so the organizational depth isn't there to be able to trade away these pieces, and the Tigers have some difficult decisions to make. Like, do you put Pelfrey in the bullpen next year? It's possible. Do you put Anibal Sanchez in the bullpen next year? Probably not. At least they won't to start the year. And so I think you're going to end up, you know, sending one of Norris or Boyd back to Toledo, even though they might not deserve it.
Yeah, it's a little strange to think that, you know, you have a starting front four in terms of, you know, signed contracts. You've got Verlander, you've got Sanchez, Pelfrey, Zimmerman. I would imagine Fulmer is your number five. You're not going to send that guy back, you know, after the season he had. So there's your front five. Now you do have all these, you know, Daniel Norris, Matt Boyd. Not to mention Shane Green. Was this supposed to be a starter? I know he's, like, kicking butt and taking names in the bullpen.
I mean, I think they're going to leave him in the bullpen.
I would think so, but I'm just saying there's an option. If they
I don't like the idea, but I think it's what they're going to do.
It's possible they could move Pelfrey out there and say he does, you know, he's Shane Green of the pen next year.
I mean, they probably should move Pelfrey of the bullpen, but will they? That's the question.
I'm surprised that they, you know, moved Sanchez to the pen when they did this year, and for as long as they did, it's not out of the question. I don't think that they possibly do it again next year, but it's a very full, very depthy kind of system right now. And you talk about where will it rank in the league. I was saying earlier, if you get anything like normal Justin Verlander, normal Michael Fulmer like we've seen this year, and then normal Jordan Zimmerman, that's a hell of a front three. I would rank that up there in the top five American League, maybe.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, you're not going to outdo the Indians. They're stacked, but
no, or even like the White Sox front three with Chris Sale and Jose Quintana and Carlos Rodon. That's a pretty good one too.
That's a good one. So you might say, like, you know, the Tigers could potentially rank number three behind those two, but there aren't many other rotations that I would think could best.
The White Sox could have David Price and reigning Cy Young winner Rick Porcello in their rotation.
You said the Red Sox.
The Red Sox.
So what are we talking about? David Price went to the White Sox? What are you?
No.
Oh, man. Do you think Porcello's going to win the?
He's already got 20 wins.
I know.
It's going to happen. It's going to be ridiculous. And the Sabre baseball world is going to erupt, and I'm going to laugh. And it's going to be great.
What is Neil Weinberg going to do?
Oh, he loves it. He's a big Porcello fan.
He has loved Porcello for so as long as I can remember since meeting Neil. If Porcello actually won the Cy Young, I don't even know. I'm gonna keep him on tab there just to see. keep in touch with Neil. You okay there, buddy? Okay. We got two more questions here. David at David Bernier 94 wants to know if the Tigers make the playoffs. Number one, who pitches the wild card game, and number two, if they win that, who's in the playoff rotation?
I mean, Justin Verlander is going to pitch in the wild card game. I don't think there's any question about that, unless like he has to pitch on the final day of the season to get into the wild card game, or has to start like a tiebreaker to get into the wild card game. It's going to be Verlander. I think that the pecking order for that probably goes like Verlander, then Fulmer, and then you're kind of screwed no matter what happens. So it might be like Verlander, then Fulmer, and then like maybe Verlander on short rest. Or something like that would be the pecking order, maybe. But then as far as like the playoff rotation goes, it's probably going to be Verlander, Fulmer, maybe one of Norris or Boyd. And then you're probably looking at either Jordan Zimmerman or Anibal Sanchez as far as that playoff rotation goes. I don't think they're going to use both Norris and Boyd in the playoff rotation, even though they might be your two best options for that. I don't think the Tigers will do that with the veterans that they have, because this is a backward-thinking organization.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that will be what it comes down to, and hopefully Zimmerman has figured something out by then.
And I just realized that the second question here is the exact same question as that from our friend @I_TheTigers wanted to know who makes the playoff rotation out of Zimmerman, Fulmer, Boyd, and Norris. I mean, I'm following your line of thought, but man, I would so much rather see Verlander, Fulmer, obviously. That's a given.
Mm-hmm.
But I would so much rather see Boyd and then Norris filling out the back end of that four-man rotation than to see either of Pelfrey, Zimmerman, Sanchez.
I mean, if Zimmerman figures something out, like if something comes back...
But that just says you don't know that he will. I mean, even if he has one good game, if he goes out and throws one more start next week and it's a good start, you still feel confident putting him into a playoff situation?
No, not at all, but the Tigers would.
No, they would. I'm saying, how do I feel about it? And I don't think I would want to see him in a playoff rotation.
No.
But you're right. I don't think the organization is going to put that much pressure on two kids.
I would much rather see Jordan Zimmerman in the playoff rotation than Anibal Sanchez.
Man, we are picking nits now. Because Sanchez has had some good starts.
He's had, yeah, a little bit, but I still wouldn't trust him there.
No, I wouldn't trust either of those guys, though. That's the point. And when you think about the fact that you need to have at least four, well, a solid top three to get through a four-man rotation and hope to win anything in the postseason, man, this is not it's not shaping up well.
Though the one nice thing that the Tigers are facing with this is that, like, even though you have a lot of iffy names in this pot for, like, playoff starters, you have a bunch of guys there that can go multiple innings. Like, you have, I mean, what they have, what, five, six starters right now that can do that? You only need four in the playoffs, and so that's, like, two guys you could keep on that roster to be able to handle multiple innings in the postseason and be able to bridge the gap to some of these, you know, setup guys that, you know, maybe you're not trusting Justin Wilson quite as much, or maybe, you know, Shane Green the same way. I don't know. And so maybe you do that kind of thing that they did in 2014 prior to the whole Jabba Chamberlain situation that we won't talk about, where they had Sanchez going for multiple innings and he looked pretty good.
Yeah, or you could get really creative, which they won't because they're a backwards-thinking organization, and you could do something like have, you know, you could keep both Norris and Boyd, stick one of them in the bullpen for a game, but what you do is you start with, you know, Norris and let him throw 4.5, 5 innings, and then you just go get Boyd to finish it out, you know, finish the game. You're essentially throwing two starters at one game, you know, and then you...
Or you could do what Joe Maddon does and just put one of them in left field.
Yeah, that would be interesting, too. Joe Maddon can do that because the Cubs have won like 180 games already this season. So
true.
Aren't they? Like,
they have a, I think they have a 17 game lead.
Yeah, they do. They're only like five, maybe four games away from clinching right now.
Three. They already have 92 wins.
They are three away from clinching.
Yep.
Wow. It's unreal. It's unreal. And was it Kyle Hendricks
playing,
the night almost threw a no-hitter?
They're playing St. Louis right now, and so it could be down to one by the end of the night.
Because St. Louis is the next closest. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. It's, as I've said before, I'm actually okay if the Tigers missed the postseason because you're just walking into the inferno of Chicago Cub-dom, you know.
I mean, hey, if they make it to the World Series and get beat by the Cubs, that's a good year.
Yeah,
we would be very happy about that. We would have been very, very happy about that at the start of the year.
My next door neighbor is from Chicago, and he's a Cubs fan. He's had his Cubs flag flying all year. I keep threatening I'm going to go over there and like steal it and replace it with a Tigers flag. But
I'm just excited to see everyone in DC get upset when the Nationals lose.
That's always
It's always kind of fun to see everyone just melt down whenever the Washington sports team loses.
It's been a strange year. There's no doubt about it. And I think that's probably just that's gonna about do it for this show. Any last words, Rob, before we shut this thing down?
Not really. I'm just Googling now to see how many runs we're down by.
Oh yeah, check the score because we need to know this.
I also checked the score of the Whitecaps game at one point, and it's not good.
No.
No.
Did they?
Well, they were down 5-2 last I checked.
Oh, no. Yeah. No. Oh, that's sad. That's sad. I'm surprised they made it as far as they did.
Yeah.
Like, this Whitecaps team is not good. Really not good.
They have, like, no power. Didn't, like, one guy have, like, three home runs, and that was a team lead for this year or something?
Yeah,
like
I think
that?
Their team leader was four or five home runs. But, yes, there's, like, compared to last year when you had Michael Gerber, who could beat the ball all around the field, you had Kristen Stewart launching bombs left and right. You know, you had way better options, a much more stacked starting rotation. They're only in the playoffs because they had a good first half, and that secured the spot. So, yeah, the fact that they even got to the second round is pretty impressive. How are the Tigers doing? Are we getting killed?
They're still down, yeah. 8-1 now. I don't remember what it was earlier, so maybe the Twins scored another run.
Well, there you have it. I don't even know where to go with that. Go Tigers. Remember, we are only one half of the conversation. You are the other half. Leave your comments for us at westofwoodward.com or find us on Twitter at hookslide23 and BYBRob. And yes, we love to hear from you guys. Some of you have been very good about dropping little notes throughout the week to say, hey, listen to the show, you know, loved this part, heard this bit. You know, it's always fun to get that feedback. Keeps us going through the insanity. And as always, subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes, please. So on behalf of Rob Rojacki and Tigers fans everywhere still clinging to hope, this is Hookslide saying have a great week. Don't forget to sharpen your cleats, and we will see you the next time on The Voice of the Turtle.